And before we get into a discussion of Halloween past, let's hear a clip from a Halloween season long ago.
If your path at midnight dark by a graveyard goes, someone whistles, let it do, that's the serious moan. Or on some dark stormy night while a tempest blows, someone yodels, let it do, that's Mysterious Moe.
Mysterious Moe's from 1930, a character in a spooky Betty Boop cartoon. We'll go back to 1930 and further in a discussion of how Halloween celebrations evolved over time, especially in the Rogue Valley. Ben Truey is a historian based in Medford. He wrote a book published 14 years ago, the Halloween Catalog Collection, 55 catalogs from the golden age of Halloween. So let's get a sense of your own interest in Halloween in the first place, in studying it as a historical thing.
Oh, Lord. I have this problem that I'm interested in everything and tend to ask questions that aren't easily answered. And I collect, in my effort to answer a lot of these questions, I started collecting old catalogs, since really our history of our material culture has not been well preserved or well interpreted. Most of what you find is in collector's guides, which tend to print nonsense, things that couldn't possibly be true. So I started doing my own research, collecting old catalogs, and noticing things that didn't quite jive with the accepted interpretation. Like in the very early catalogs, there's no mention of Halloween. There's no mention of trick-or-treating. You'll find pages with costumes, but they're not called Halloween costumes. So I thought it would be pretty easy to figure out why. Just go to the newspapers, and that just complicated things, because I found out things that weren't supposed to be true.
Like what?
Well, that Halloween wasn't celebrated the way I'd assumed. If you go to contemporary newspapers, they would say things like the ancient tradition of trick-or-treating, as if Americans had been trick-or-treating since the 1840s when the Irish brought it over. And that's simply not the case. Halloween had been completely forgotten in this country in the 1860s and 70s, and was not celebrated at all except in very, very small pockets in the Northeast.
Was there some sort of religious pressure against observing Halloween or anything like that, or was it just one of those things that people had forgotten about?
And people just forgot about it. My best guess as to why is because the Irish and Scots were getting assimilated, and then the pressure, the social and economic pressure of the Civil War just made it inappropriate to be celebrating as a holiday like Halloween.
So how far back do we know that trick-or-treating, you mentioned that the Irish brought it over with them, that was a thing that happened more in the 1840s?
Well, not trick-or-treating, mm-hmm. Halloween. Mm-hmm. Trick-or-treating didn't really exist until it was invented independently in America in the 1930s. But there are traditions of ritual begging in the British Isles. They call it souling there, but it's really been independently invented, you know, hundreds of times all around the world through every era and every culture. There are instances of ritual begging, but done by children in costume in ancient Greece, and then it's done in Latin America, and you know, it hasn't been well studied, and is really outside my purview. Just finding out that this was the case helps establish my case that it was independently embedded here as well.
So Halloween itself, you mentioned it kind of lain fallow through a good chunk of the 19th century, and mm-hmm. I had a chance to look at the stuff you posted online from years ago about mm-hmm. different newspaper accounts of Halloween around 1900 and beyond, and it mm-hmm. sounds like it wasn't much of anything other than just a night of mischief for young lads.
Yeah, it was a patchwork of customs all across the country, and it was a patchwork, even where it was celebrated, it was a patchwork because you had different age levels progressing through different levels of Halloween prankery. You know, the small children would carry jack-o'-lanterns around to scare people, which actually would scare people because in a very dark age when houses were dimly lit and streets were dimly lit, if at all, just seeing this brightly lit face outside your window would be genuinely startling. And then you'd progress, you know, to where you had the pranks that were committed by what the newspapers would refer to as children of voting age. who would do the things like leading a cow into the church belfry or something, which was a pretty awful prank because cows don't go down steps.
No.
And cows would typically have to be disassembled to be removed from the belfry.
Ouch. We're talking to Ben Truey, a Medford historian, about Halloween celebrations in the past and how they've developed into what they've become today. If you have stories to share about Halloween celebrations past and how different they might be from what we assume to be part of Halloween now, we would love to hear from you. 800-838-3760 to share your story by phone or send us an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Should point out, too, that if we're talking about boys of voting age, we're talking about 21 plus because that's what voting age was back then.
Oh, yes.
So definitely some older folks. Coming around and doing things. As you look at catalogs for the study you did for your book 14 years ago, what did you notice in terms of things changing over time? And were there key years when things seemed to really blossom into something more like the Halloween observations we know today?
The catalogs aren't all that helpful as far as that, because the catalogs tend to follow culture at a several years removed. They will reflect the culture years after the culture has already changed. Certainly, there's no one trying to capitalize on Halloween at all until, I think, 1919 is my first actual catalog that's where they're actually trying to pitch merchandise for the Halloween market. The better sources is magazines and newspapers, which were actually the driving force for spreading the development of the holiday that the children developed themselves.
Was Halloween somewhat tamer from what you're able to ascertain from the newspaper? I ask because one of the things that really stuck in my mind was some sort of women's club dinner held on the night of October 31st, which seems like the last kind of thing you would do on a Halloween night in this day and age.
Well, the parties were tame. That's how the adults observed Halloween. And really, it's those parties which were aggressively pushed by women's magazines starting in the 1890s that laid the groundwork for trick-or-treating, because then you had all these parties going on out everywhere with treats available for the asking, and you've got kids out anyway pranking, often dressed as hobos, so it was a very easy progression for them to play the part of the hobo and ask for a treat or demand a treat.
Oh, I see. So they're out playing tricks anyway. They know they're going to houses where there are going to be treats present. So give us the treats or we'll play a trick on you.
Yeah. And it was not well received. You know, a lot of the Halloween histories, even scholarly works, will say that the adults invented trick-or-treating as a way to stop kids from pranking. And this flies in the face of what you read in the newspapers, because it was not well received. Adults would call the police and have children arrested. Even as late as 1952... a high school principal slapped a child on his porch who asked for a treat, and he and the child were taken to court. And it's interesting that 1952 is the year that Halloween really demonstrably went nationwide, because that's the year that, you know, as he's standing on the porch arguing this kid and eventually slapping him, you know, a Disney cartoon, Donald Duck's Trick or Treat, is being played in theaters across the country. Ozzie and Harriet on their Halloween show, you know, give treats to trick-or-treaters, one of whom was Jerry Mathers, by the way, in an irrelevant
from
aside.
From Leave It to Beaver?
Yeah, he would be from Leave It to Beaver years in the future. And of course, it was being pushed by candy companies and by the Jolly Time popcorn company and by newspapers all across the country, grocery stores and their advertising. So by 1952, there was no turning back on Halloween. It was nationwide.
I was reading a hearing actually on the radio yesterday about the figures on Halloween. It's become pretty much the second most important holiday in terms of the amount of money spent on it.
It's a big deal. It's really the chameleon of holidays. It changes. It's not really firmly tied to any religious tradition or any, you know, historical events. So it's really what you make of it. And unfortunately now it's what industry makes of it, what big companies make of it. And they're actually pushing it very successfully in other countries. Like in England, they do trick-or-treating using the American phrase, dressing up, going on, doing classic trick-or-treating, strictly because it has been published pushed by candy companies.
How long has England had trick-or-treating?
I think they started in the 80s.
Okay.
So very late, you know, 30 years after it went nationwide here.
Are kids getting slapped by principals over there today? Are they lagging that far behind?
It wasn't well received there either in the 1980s, although not because of the extortion aspect. It was because of – they felt that this American tradition was being foisted upon them by big business, and very justifiably.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're talking a $9 billion holiday, I believe, is the figure I saw yesterday. Let's get some input from the audience here about Halloween celebrations past. Here's Mary Grace in Springfield. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ben Truey, Medford historian.
Thank you.
So what's on your mind?
Oh, I just wanted to share two Halloween traditions from the distant past in my family. My grandmother, my maternal grandmother, was Scots-Irish, and there was a very old tradition of leaving a candle in the window and an extra setting at dinner on Halloween night. Just in case there were any ghosts from ancestors past wandering about, just so they would know they were welcome. And even though she was in this country, she did that up until she died, I think, in the 1990s. You know, thinking that her family was far away, but, you know, anybody from that culture would be welcome at the table, which I thought was really sweet.
That sounds like the Irish Christmas tradition of leaving food and a candle out to guide the Holy Family to your table.
She did that, too.
Oh, okay, good. So, and what was the other tradition?
That was from, she grew up in the prairie in Wyoming, and she said that in her neighborhood, well, in the, you know, neighborhood's the wrong word, in her district of farmland, the boys would go out on Halloween night to do pranks, and the best and worst prank of them all was that they would pick the most hated man in the area, and they would move his outhouse 3 feet further from his front door.
Oh, yes.
All right. Thanks for those stories, Mary Grace. Appreciate that. So Ben, you had an oh, yes on that one. That's a familiar story.
Oh, yeah. It's a classic prank, or there are variations. You would wait until the hated man entered the outhouse before tipping it over.
Let's take another call. I think we have something like that from Kit in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking Halloween's past with Ben Truey.
Thank you. My father, who was born in 1909 and lived up in Montana, he was not particular about a hated man. He said he and his friends would push over outhouses, and they would put potatoes in exhaust pipes and wait for people to start their cars, and they were a different type of car back then. I guess they'd explode. And he'd been, he, of course, you know, didn't want us kids doing any of those things, so we just threw water balloons and soaped windows.
Did you ever do the shaving cream balloons, too?
We fill them with all sorts of stuff.
All right. Thanks for sharing the story, kid. Appreciate it. In fact, there were people I knew who talked about at least having baggies with Nair, the hair remover. You'd lob that at people's heads. I don't know if they.
Oh, my God.
You know, suburban New York, we can get into real some fun stuff.
That's terrible. But the car pranks is really one of the things that started to kill pranking and started this extreme, really, and an escalation in the push to have Halloween parties. Because, you know, previous to that, kids could do pranks with livestock, with wagons, you know, which would be easy to drag out in the street. But when you're talking about cars, damage is harder to do damage. Damage is a lot more permanent, a lot more expensive. And with urbanization and the switch to mechanical transportation, tolerance for Halloween pranking went down, you know, precipitously. And that's when you start seeing articles in the newspapers about the police will be out on the prowl. There will be a policeman on every corner, and don't you dare do any pranking. And this was taking place in the 20s and 30s. Then when World War II happened, you know, there was a patriotic element. You know, it's unpatriotic to prank because you are, you know, robbing sleep from war workers, and it's an inappropriate thing to do when kids are dying, you know, over in Europe and in the South Pacific. So pranking pretty much went away in most of the country in the 40s and was replaced by trick-or-treating shortly thereafter.
To give people a constructive thing to do if extortion for candy is considered constructive, but better than out-soaping windows or slashing tires or some of the other things. Let's take another call. Wolfgang in Sunny Valley, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Halloween's past with Ben Truey.
Good morning. What strikes me is that there's a phrase called making light off, right? So you're talking about something serious, something real. and then because it might be discomforting, you make a joke out of it. That's sort of standard psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And so what my feeling is that the actual origin of what's called the Day of the Dead and what it means and the connection to ancestors, you don't, in Native American cultures, you don't find Halloween pranks. I mean, prank is basically a fear-based reaction of like, let's make fun of it when it is actually real. It's the same way that little boys make fun of girls because they're scared of them. And so the Halloween, the Hallows time, the time when the veil between the worlds is the thinnest, that's why it's the Day of the Dead, when I can call my ancestors for support, when I can access all this the easiest. I mean, the psychics have this veil thin all the time. So that's what I think is being thrown out the window.
A sense of connection with the other world.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks for that, Wolfgang. Appreciate that. Thoughts, Ben?
Well, yeah, that's what folklorists say, is that, you know, the origin is from the Irish, the Gaelic or Druidish tradition of Samhain, when the veil between the world of the living and the dead is very thin, you know. And that's really where pranking comes from. Originally, pranking were things that were done in secret and in quiet, and they were things that were intended to be discovered in the morning to cause wonderment, you know, and make people think that, oh, my goodness, maybe the fairies really were about last night. And that changed around 1902 when the jack-o'-lantern became associated with Halloween. Previously, the jack-o'-lanterns had been a harvest time prank, and they were not Halloween-y at all, because when you think about it, you know, it was a lot colder back then. By October 31st, pumpkins aren't available. They're already in storage.
Oh, sure,
they're
yeah.
food, so you can't go out in the field and steal one. So actually, my first, the oldest illustration I have of a jack-o'-lantern is from 1867, and in the background, you can see children stealing a pumpkin that they're going to turn into a and they're stealing it from a barn, which has been stored for the winter, for
All
winter
right.
food.
Interesting history. Ben Truey from Medford, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Anytime.